Welcome back, everyone. This is the Get Fit SoCal podcast. And no, your ears do not deceive you. I'm not your host, Andy Gallardo. My name is Robert Fernandez, and I work with Andy at our KP regional office in Southern California. In this episode, we have what I think turned out to be a pretty deep conversation about life and yoga with Shauna Meyerson. She is a creator of Yoga Athletica and travels across the globe teaching folks how to go beyond their perceived limits through yoga. We'll talk about lessons learned through failure, we discuss the definition of an athlete. Ultimately, we spend a lot of time connecting the wisdom found in yoga to real-life lessons. Before we begin the interview, a brief disclaimer. This information is not intended to replace your healthcare professional. Opinions of host and guests do not represent the views of, or opinions of Kaiser Foundation Health Plan, Kaiser Foundation Hospitals, or Southern California Permanente Medical Group. Neither KFHP, KFH, or SCPMG receive any compensation for products or services mentioned on the show, nor do they endorse or promote any products mentioned. All right, now let's get into the interview. This episode, I am excited to welcome our guest, Shauna Meyerson. She is a globally acclaimed creator of Yoga Athletica. She started teaching yoga in 2002 and is widely considered to be one of the most effective and engaging instructors on earth today. Teaching from absolute beginners through the most advanced students, Shauna has a special gift for getting just about anyone into just about any pose they could possibly imagine. And I know from speaking with her prior to this, handstands are a particular skill set of hers. So we'll get into that a little bit. But welcome to the show, Shauna. Happy to have you.
Thank you so much, Robert. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, it's been a long time in the making. I know, you know, we were exchanging some emails during the holiday season and we finally got it together. So I am grateful for your patience. Thank you.
Patience is a virtue. And by the way, it's a big virtue in
yoga.
Yeah,
it's all connected. We're gonna get into all aspects of how yoga affects more than just the body and the flexibility. All right. So with that, you know, we kind of keep it simple around here. The first question is just tell us about yourself. How did you get to where you are? All of the good stuff, nuts and bolts. You can go back as far as you want or as recent. So it's up to you.
Like first? Okay. So basically, like, let me just tell you that the day before my first yoga class, if you had ever told me I'd be a yoga instructor someday, I would have laughed in your face. I mean, yoga completely blindsided me, but they say that everything comes exactly when you need it. At the time, I was, you know, in the middle of, I would say, you know, a successful career. I had worked at some very big companies, and I was also getting my MBA at UCLA. I stepped into a yoga class, not really on accident per se, but somebody had been telling me for years, I need to try this yoga thing. And I'm like, yeah, you know, like sitting around and humming. Not my thing. But I had broken a toe and I could barely stand. I'm like, fine, I'll try this stupid yoga thing. Let's just say that within 1 month, I was practicing every day. Within 3 months, I left my job and I actually dropped out of my MBA program because I felt this calling that this was something I absolutely needed to do.
Wow, strong. Strong calling.
It was interesting because I've always been like a super type A overachiever. There's no other way to classify my existence prior to that. And when I walked into yoga that day, it was the first time, and this was just a few weeks before my 30th birthday, it was the first time that anybody had told me that it was okay to fall. And unless you come from this uber perfectionist world of the only thing you could ever be is the best or you're a failure, which is a standard that no one on earth can realistically uphold, it's hard sometimes to understand just how profound that revelation was. But just the concept of falling, not being failing, gave me superpowers. There's no other word for it, because they always say, like, what would you do in life differently if you knew you could not fail? And I can't think of many places on earth other than your yoga mat that you literally can't fail. And that is like such a powerful thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, you and I discussed when we met in person at the farmer's market in South Bay, at the medical center. We kind of had a pre-podcast discussion. And I think we related on our, you know, history and experience as in sports and as athletes, as elite performers, right? And for me, that's where I found that it's okay to fail, right? Largely probably because I was on a team sport primarily. I played football, right, and baseball. And so I know you played tennis, right? So maybe, you know, I'm just making up. Maybe it's a little bit a harder lesson to learn, or it more depends on your own individual success, right? As a tennis player, and it's harder to fail.
Sure. Because I was a singles player. I mean, obviously there's doubles, and then you can blame it on your partner. but in singles, I mean, it's a very cut and dry ladder. You win, you go up, you lose, you go down. That's it. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the, again, like I'm going to use the terminology of sports, but the failure is, it's inextricably linked. Like as soon as you lose a match, you could watch it with your eyes.
They're
like hand down, right? Your ranking automatically is affected. And so they're, and I played team sports too. They are in a way more forgiving, but in a way they're not also, because it's like you're letting down the team when you have like an error. I mean, you know, in baseball, I mean, come on, they keep actual error stats.
Yep.
Right. I mean, that's a painful precedent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And in football, you know, the professional level, they're starting to, you know, have these incentives, you know, for contracts for big, they're high elite players. And, you know, you throw one too many interceptions and you're not going to get that incentive, you know, so there's even that,
right,
you know, fear of failure. So fear, I want to talk about fear. Maybe that, you know, we can sort of develop that as a theme to come back to. Because it relates a lot to what you do in your work, specifically with handstands.
Sure.
So, but before we get to that, maybe you can describe just a little bit about, you know, Yoga Athletica, where the name came from, what you see the vision of your company is.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, the name Yoga Athletica literally came because I want to speak primarily to athletes. I can be honest that I have some very, very non-athletic students because they just love the yoga. They don't care about handstands or anything fancy. But coming from an athletic background, I felt like, among other things, when we get older, unless you basically play tennis, which I did, or golf, like there's not like a lot of future for an athlete, right? Like there's not a lot of recreational tackle football in this world. Either you make the NFL or your football days are over, basically. And what I found was that from working particularly with athletes, that it gives them, going back to the concept of like patience, but it gives them like the patience, the power, the flexibility, the strength, the balance, all of these elements that have like a counter element in life, right? I did not think that there was anything that could be more effective as, I'm going to just say, as a workout, even though that's
common parlance, right?
Very much mitigating the practice.
Yeah.
As just cross training. Like after sports, I became a cross trainer, but when I was introduced to the mind body element, right? And if you're willing to go there into the soul element, that's where everything changed for me. And I think that for athletes, like a really strong athlete always understands how much the mental aspect affects the mm-hmm. game, right? There's a different edge. And to me, an athlete doesn't even have to mean like an elite athlete. Really, it just means somebody with a drive to succeed and to excel at whatever it is that they do. And it may be, you know, running or biking or playing football or playing tennis, but it really could be anything for people who just strive for excellence always in their lives. So Yoga Athletica was meant to sort of be like, if you are serious about changing your life in a positive way, this isn't going to be just lying down on the floor. We're going to work on every aspect of the practice. That means a stronger body, a stronger mind, and a stronger spirit.
Yeah, and that's the thing that struck me, is it's really a foundational approach, you know, to excellence and to physical excellence, leading to the mental, you know, emotional, the body, mind, spirit component. So as an athlete, you know, I wanted to, you know, what you said just now reminds me a lot of a book I read in college called The Ultimate Athlete by George Leonard. And it's not a book that a lot of folks I've encountered have read. So if you've never heard of it, don't worry. But the thesis is just what you described, that, you know, anyone can really be an athlete. It's the act of, you know, overcoming your own boundaries, you know, overcoming your own limits, and continually pushing and seeing and exploring where, you know, where's the edge of my ability now? You know, where can I push it sure. to in a sort of continual way? So on that topic, you know, what's your approach to progressing clients, you know, maybe someone who's non-athletic, someone who is right. you know, more of a beginner? What's your typical sure. approach to that?
So it's funny, what you said very much encapsulates my theory, which is that, first of all growth happens outside our comfort zones. Okay. That's not like new mm-hmm. information. If you live a complacent life, you might feel happy, but you can't grow. And to me, you're either doing one of two things in a very state of nature: you're growing or you're dying. Yep. Those are your two options. I prefer growth. So the way that I see it is this: it's a process really of pressing always on your edges, but at the same time, respecting them. I think about, like, a nice analogy would be if I had like an enormous armoire, like one that I could never like lift or push or anything. Okay. And it's like stuck in the middle of my living room here. And every day I just push it a little bit, and it may only move that much, but mm-hmm. it's moving. Right. And that eventually it's going to move across the room to the wall where I need it, right? Now, I could also argue that in this process of incremental growth, I am going to get stronger, right? Because I'm pushing this very heavy object, which means that the increments will likely become larger. Mm-hmm. But the respecting edges is super important too, because that's where we go from like, the type B who needs to be sort of pushed to push, but then the type A that needs to be pushed to pull mm-hmm. back, yeah. right? Because there is no yoga pose on earth, none. Whatever you think is the craziest, coolest, most awesome, fear-busting, powerful pose on earth that is worth injuring right. yourself, right? And so how do we get injuries? We get injuries when our ego becomes too vested in our process. And when our ego becomes too vested, we don't respect mm-hmm. edges. So it's that very fine balance. I always say it's the fine balance between bravery and stupidity. But it is that fine balance between pushing on your edges, but also respecting that edges exist for all of us, with one caveat. It doesn't mean that anything is impossible. If there's anyone on earth who could do anything, it's not impossible. We just by yeah, definition. Sure. But it doesn't mean that it's possible today. Mm-hmm. You know, I have like, it's funny, I have some like shorts on YouTube, like my two most popular ones are like how to drop all the way back into a handstand and stand back up, and how to go all the way down in a split. Now, these are processes that could literally take years, but because I record it in 10 seconds, you know, people are like, well, it didn't work for me. I'm like, well, how, like how many times yes. did you try? Because, you know, here's the whole
and where'd you
video,
start from, right? Like, what was your starting point?
Yeah. That's right. That's right. There's this book called The Gap Versus the Gain, which speaks exactly to what you're speaking about, which I think about all the time. It's like the gap is how far are you from your goal, but the gain is how far have you come from where you mm-hmm. were, right? So again, it doesn't matter how far this armoire, I keep turning around like it's there. This armoire is from the wall. What matters is how far is it from where right. it started?
Yes. And then you can see that change, that difference over time. And that, speaking personally, you know, that, in a world where when change and progress is so sort of out there and ethereal and you can't always put your finger on it, you can't always see it, manifesting as many opportunities in my life I found of, oh, look, I've moved it this far. Oh, look, I cleaned that corner of the garage. You know, that sure. that those things, you know, serve me and serve my well-being immensely, I've found, as I've gotten to the stage in this process of life. So
it's so important. I mean, people tend to measure their lives by their like right. big moments or big successes. And it's like, if you only measure, for example, your success in handstand, the day that you do whatever, a 30-second hold in handstand, you just wasted like however many hours, which might add up to months or years. It's like those moments didn't even count. They didn't matter. They did, like, if we only measure our lives in moments, then our lives aren't worth much, because it means that like 99.99999% of our lives is just mm-hmm. fluff. Right. And then we have these, you know, we get married, we have a child, we, whatever, we do a handstand, we score a touchdown. That's not life. Those might be the high points of life, but we need to learn to celebrate all of life and our daily successes. There's nobody who doesn't have successes every single day. Sometimes you have sure. to work hard for them, but they're yeah. always there.
Yeah. True words. One thing that I was reminded of, or it's kind of funny and silly, but are you familiar with these videos on social media where there will be like a couple, you know, doing some sort of physical, like acrobatic thing, like, you know, the woman will climb up on the man's shoulders or something, and they'll do some sort of weird thing. Is this ringing any bells whatsoever?
They've got lots of different. I thought you were going to say the Beckham challenge.
There's sort yeah. There's the, maybe yeah. It's sort of along those lines, but they're more like acrobatic, like where the man will lift up the woman and support her like in a flag pose or okay. something. And okay. it's this cute little thing where they show like the couple that does it right. And then, you know, the couple at their home, okay. that's like, hey, let's try this. Like, and, you know, it's just, to me, I like seeing these things because it, although yes, they yeah. fail miserably most of the time. And one or the other partner yes. ends up, you know, eating carpet. everyone's okay. But yeah. it just shows, you know, that I don't know. I take away that, hey, there's a willingness, you know, still out there, even if it's for clicks or for right. clout or for, you know, to get people to laugh, there's still a willingness to sort of challenge yourself and see if this person did that, you know, well, let's see if we can do it, you know, right. and it's, sure. I find this funny.
It's funny because, yeah, actually, so I have this discount for KP with my Vimeo channels, and I have it on the primary video Vimeo channel, but I have the premium channel that has student models, and it's funny because they fall all the time, and part of me is like, maybe I shouldn't post these because, you know, I'm trying to like mm-hmm. teach people how yoga is done, and I'm just teaching, they're doing all the demonstrating, but the feedback keeps coming back over and over and over. Like, we appreciate the student models. It makes us feel better about our process to to know that in reality, you know, some people do fall out of a handstand or can't get into a backbend or whatnot. So, yeah, I think that what you're referring to, though, is literally that human element, right, of connecting, because there's never been a perfect person created in the history of the world. And it's unlikely that you, I, or anyone watching this podcast is going to be that person, right, either.
Yeah. Something we need to remind ourselves of constantly. Right. So thank you for mentioning the discount. I wanted to tell our listeners that we do have a special discount available in our getfitsocal.org website for Yoga Athletica. And you can go there. It's in the special offers tab. And we will be sure to make any new discounts or any updates, you know, that Shauna has to offer available there through that site. And at the end, we'll give you a chance to kind of tell our listeners where they can find you in totality. Cool. All right, great. Cool. So let's dig into a little bit more about handstands. I think I mentioned my, you know, I have a background in sports psychology and sort of performance psychology, getting already elite athletes, you know, to go above and beyond and get better. One of the common barriers is, you know, recognizing whether someone is motivated by fear of failure or motivated by achieving mastery, right? They're kind of two things. So kind of, you know, tell me a little bit of how that plays into those who want to achieve the handstand. You know, are they usually one over the other or a mixed bag?
Well, I mean, listen, handstands require, I'm not going to lie, a lot of agility, a lot of strength, a lot of proprioceptive elements more than anything. It's just that when we go upside down, most people just don't even know where their bodies are in space. So first of all, I mean, yes, to say that handstands are not physical would be a ridiculous statement for me to make. But I have to say that most people who are even moderately athletic actually already have the strength to get into a handstand, okay? And then at that point, it's a combination of two things. One is not knowing how to utilize the strength, but as you alluded to, the bigger issue is their mental blocks. They don't see handstands as something that they can do. They see it as something that other people can do, and that they wish they can do instead of believing they can do. I'm 52 years old, and if you look at some of the things that I do, in fact, on YouTube, I have like a video that's 52 poses for my 52nd birthday, which is a good, you know, place to see like the crazy things that I do. But the only reason that I can still do this stuff when I could be a grandma, if in theory I had kids, I could in theory be a grandma, is because I believe I can. And I cannot emphasize this enough. The day that I went from things being really hard to every single thing being accessible to me, including, of course, handstands, which is sort of the crown jewel of it all, was the day that I just flipped a switch in my brain from I can't to I can. And it really, Robert, I just can't even emphasize enough how simple it was. That was exactly what happened. So to me, handstands specifically, why are they the crown jewel? I mean, they're cool. I won't lie. I mean, a lot of people just want to do them because they think they're cool. But the process of learning how to handstand requires, I keep saying it, such patience, but also like such perseverance, right? You have to be willing to fall and get back up, which is a skill that we do not learn in life, right? We are, again, sort of programmed to be egotistically connected to our results and to quit when things don't, never mind, sure, I just can't do that, and to walk away. And so, and of course, in order to do a handstand in the middle of the room, there is that element of fearlessness that must pervade every soul in your body, and trust that you can do it without hurting yourself and that you will succeed. It's such a powerful process. I don't think that handstands in and of themselves are the magic. It's learning handstands that's the magic.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'd imagine the process might involve, like, you know, being spotted, you know, by you or by a partner. I know that you do teach it 100% remote and through videos, and you know, go ahead and do it on your own. But do you ever teach it with a partner, or, you know, with that help?
Those
cases, how this is sort of a given that this is all sort of a metaphor for, you know, any individual overcoming something scary for themselves, right? How do you get someone from being, you know, secure in that safety of, oh, I have a partner spotting me, to, okay, I'm 100% out there on my own, no safety net, no spotting, you know, that must be a specific, you know, sweet spot that you have to kind of really fine tune.
So let me start by saying, I know this is so weird and random. I've actually had two students, who only had one hand. Mm. And they both were able to do handstands. Not only were they both able to do handstands, but I never had to spot either one of the, actually, that's not true. One of them I did have to spot at first to get her into it, because she was a little nervous about it. But again, like, if I could get these two women into it, anybody could do it. But let's talk about moving from spotting to not spotting. So first of all, if I'm working with an absolute beginner, hands-on, and again, 98% of people I work with do not need a spot. Doing it remotely is just as effective, but I also give them videos so that if they have a friend or a family member who can spot them, it shows the family member how to spot them so that they could have that. So, but if I'm working, in fact, I'm working with somebody right now who, to put it lightly, is not athletically inclined. And I've been working with him actually all through the pandemic, but he could not do a handstand on his own. Like, I think it's fear, but whatever it was. So now he's working with me in my house. This just started last week. Pandemic's up. It took years, but he's back. And he only needs like this much help, but with a little bit of help, like, he's up, right? So to start, when I'm working with an absolute beginner, I spot them in front of the wall. So even though I'm holding them, they have sort of that double safety net, right? So that they could feel safe. Once I have them up, right, I will help them to find the wall. I mean, they're this far from the wall. It's not like it's hard to find the wall. At which point, as a spotter, like, I can tell from the pressure being put on my hands whether they can hold themselves up or not, okay? At which point I'll say, you know, if I believe that they have their balance, I'll say, are you okay if I let go? And they'll say yes or no. And then if they say yes, I just, you know, I stand there like this, but I don't touch them so they know I'm there. And I'll generally help them on the way down. And if they say no, I just say, okay, I keep holding on. Now, the process of learning to handstand away from the spotter is that it's funny because the wall is a prop, right? I mean, in the most literal of terms, it is a prop. It's propping you up. But just like a block, I see you have a yoga block there and back, or just like a strap. As far as I'm concerned, any prop that we use in life, I'm going to go ahead and use the word crutch, even though I know that's a little dramatic, but the goal of props is not to use the prop. It's to get rid of the prop, right? To use the prop to the extent that you need to, for the duration that you need to, so you can accomplish whatever it is you're seeking to accomplish, whether it's handstand, whether it's walking, whether it's whatever, without said prop, right? So again, this is going to come back to proprioception. So when I'm holding somebody and helping them, I'm also talking them through it so that they can, like, can you feel where your shoulders are? Can you feel where your hips are? I want you to feel the process. Like, what am I providing for you that you can't provide on your own? So, for example, once I feel that little bit of pressure, I'll be like, okay, this is where I'm going to help you. So they can turn on their brain to like, oh, this is where the hips need to move differently, for example. Okay. And so, and it's the same with the wall. I use the wall only as a tool to get off the wall. Okay. I always tell people, don't kick up to the wall like you're trying to kick up to the wall, because that's just going to flip you over in the middle of the room. You need to go to the wall like you're trying to balance in the middle of the room, and the wall is just there to catch you, not to like be your handstand. So it's a negotiation. If my hands are on them, it's very easy to know if they're doing it on their own or if I'm doing the work for them.
Yeah.
Very easy. But the process is just a process of gradually, you know, moving away at first, you know, just with my hands there, and eventually going, what if I walk away? Are you okay if I walk away? And they'll get to that point, and we'll usually also in there just have them practice some kicks also, even if they still need my help, just to start getting the feel for the difference between with me and without me, so that they could, you know, cross that bridge.
Yeah. I love that approach of you as a coach, not only, you know, communicating with them and saying, hey, I'm here, or hey, I'm going to let go, but, you know, getting them to realize their own inner strength, like what they're doing on their own. And that's, I mean, we're talking about handstands, but that's life, right? That's how you progress. And that's how you, as someone who, with all of our emotions and fears and, you know, preconceived notions, it sometimes takes someone from outside saying, hey, you've got this, like you, or asking, you know, how much of this do you have? You know, I'm here to take on a little bit more, a little bit less. And that's just, you know, physical practice. I think that's the value of physical practices like yoga and like other things that challenge us physically, is we can extrapolate that to the mental and emotional realms.
Sure. And it's funny, I like in my brain, I'm thinking about like, you'll see t-shirts all the time that say things like football is life, baseball is life, tennis is life, because people are just such fans, right? And it really just means like, it's my favorite thing in the world, right? It doesn't mean anything. But when I say yoga is life, I actually mean it quite literally, right? Yoga, people think in general that it's just asana, meaning the postures that we do on our mat. But the truth is that yoga is considered to be a science. It's a science, and it's a science for living. It's a philosophy. And everything that we bring to our mats is largely a reflection of how we behave or relate to the world off of our mats. Now, I could say the same thing for, you know, playing any sport or getting on stage and, you know, being in a play or writing a book or whatever. The difference is the mindfulness that goes into understanding how our mats reflect our lives and how our lives also reflect our mats. It's a very symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. One of my, professors described it, that idea of, you know, sport and any given sport being sort of a microcosm of life. It's, you know, life is far too complex to sort of analyze and test yourself and grow in that big fishbowl. You sometimes need to zero in, go to a specific place, a mat with a specific set of rules, a specific set of, you know, constraints, and then test yourself that way and kind of feel your way through, okay, where am I? So I think you put it perfectly with that analogy. So, you know, we've talked very specifically about yoga and handstands and how it relates to life. Is there anything you might say to someone who's never tried yoga or maybe has a very casual conception of what it is? What would you say to those listeners?
Sure. So a few things. One is that there's a lot of different kinds of yoga out there, and there really is yoga for everyone. Now all yoga instructors won't be for all people, including me. You know, again, I'm going back to the concept of a perfect person. But the thing is that I think in the West, there is this ultra glorification of our physical existence, above all else, right? And so that is why most yoga out there has been really sort of watered down to nothing but, again, like a physical practice of postures on the mat. So my recommendation for a beginner is, first of all, to make sure that they approach yoga in a mindful manner instead of just as a workout. Because though I think, you know, certain forms of yoga are a really tremendous workout, that's neither why yoga was created, nor is it really, I hate to say this out loud, going to be your best way if, like, your only goal is, you know, physical strength, for example, you know, go running. So for beginners, the other thing is, especially for athletes, is the cart before the horse. That I have so many people who, like, I've had people who have come to me and they're like, Shauna, I want you to teach me how to press in the handstand. And I'm like, okay, great. You know, that's my specialty. What they neglect to tell me is they don't even know how to do a handstand. And I'm like, well, I mean, a press to handstand is like a super advanced version of a handstand. And they're so eager to get to the next step. It's like if I'm trying to make a cake and I'm like, well, I'm just going to frost it now, but it's just batter in a bowl. Like, that's not really going to end well for me. Right. And so I think that as beginners, especially if somebody is sort of like a higher aspirational athlete, is they just want to do the hard stuff. They don't want to go through the building blocks. They don't want to start from square one. But I will argue that square one exists for a reason. Because when we skip steps, we wind up with injuries. And we wind up with injuries, we turn against yoga. Now, for beginners who are not very athletic, what I would say is that they're in luck. It is such a forgiving practice, first of all. And it's a very accessible practice because, again, there are very basic poses, right? And then there are very complex poses. And I think that, let me just say a caveat to my Vimeo, like the thumbnail shows me in this crazy arm bounce with my leg behind my head. And, you know, people are like, okay, yeah, no, that's not me. And I'm like, well, it doesn't have to be you, like, right? This is the advanced stuff. But we start with the beginning stuff. And again, sometimes it's hard. It's hard to let go of the ego. But if we're just starting the practice, we need to let go of the expectation of what it's supposed to look like and instead just move into the understanding that we all move at our own pace and every single, like you alluded to before, that every single thing is a success, right? For some people, you know, let's go back to handstands. And I'm not going to say that handstand is a beginner or an advanced pose. I have beginners who could do handstands right out of the gate. And I have people who have practiced yoga for 10, 20, 30, or 40 years, literally or more, and still can't do a handstand. So I try not to classify things as beginner or intermediate or advanced because there's a lot of variables that go into these things. But when it comes to handstands, it's like if you could put your hands on the floor and one leg in the air, say, and take a tiny hop, like that's a success. Mm-hmm. That's a success. You just got brave on your hands. I don't care if you jump this far off the floor. That's a success, right? And so as a beginner, we need to just understand the gradual nature and the natural progression in this practice and accept that where we are is exactly where we need to be. You know, we grow up. How many times when you were a kid did you hear A for effort, right? But you don't get an A for effort in this world. There's no way you get an A. You get an F for effort if you fail, right? So it's not that simple, but on the yoga mat, it actually is. So it takes some reprogramming. It takes some, you know, sort of forgiving yourself for your own, you know, imperfections, which again, and learning, we all have them, and learning to embrace them and knowing that imperfections represent an opportunity for growth.
Yes. Yes. That's a message that we use a lot in the work that I do, you know, in employee wellness and building resilience and seeing some of the stressors, some of the barriers and roadblocks to our well-being as opportunities for growth. So, I wanted to hang on to that theme. One last question before we kind of wrap up and you tell us more about where we can find you, but, are there other sort of milestone poses or moves in yoga that, you know, might serve as that sort of, aha moment for someone who's a complete beginner? You know, I'm thinking like single support stuff. If someone's very, you know, maybe they're a little bit overweight or they're very unstable, you know, I imagine a tree pose would be like a very sought after goal or worthwhile goal. What other sort of milestones might you or have you encountered or used?
Oh boy, I'm going to tell you that's a really hard one to answer for the reason that I mentioned before, that there's no such thing as an easy or a hard yoga pose. There's just no such thing. I could do a handstand in my sleep. Does that make it easy? No, it's a really, really hard thing to do. Then there are certain poses. There's this pose called Pashasana, which is like squatting really low with your feet on the floor and like coming into a twisting bind. If that doesn't sound like Chinese to people, when you look at it, it doesn't look like the hardest pose you've ever seen in your life, believe me. But it took me years and years, longer than handstand, of daily practice to be able to get that pose. And if I'm going to be totally honest with you, and I'll go ahead and be totally honest with you, I still have days where I struggle with Pashasana on one side. But I have had students who are brand new, and they could get on their first try because they have different flexibilities than I have, right? And so in order to have a landmark pose, it's just a function of A, again, like you say, the gap versus the gain. Where did you come from? And honestly, everyone I think in life has to really define their own breakthroughs. I think that one of the challenges that we have as humans is measuring ourselves against others instead of against our own personal best. We had mentioned this handstand program that I have, and it's funny because I have one woman who joined specifically because she had some major spinal issues and she didn't believe she could even kick up to a wall. She just wanted to be, everyone else is trying to handstand in the middle of the room. She just wants to do a handstand, right? And so does that mean that her milestone wasn't hit because she's kicking up to the wall instead of the middle of the room? Because everyone else in the program will say, yeah, that she has not achieved the goal of the program, but she achieved her goal of the program. Right? So, you know, and as far as, if I could just mention really quickly, as far as weight is concerned, I don't believe that weight is really a huge determining factor, except for in a few poses, like twist, it will be a little bit harder. But I used to work with a man who has to have been close to 400 pounds when I started working with him. Now, I'm embarrassed to say I was a very young teacher at the time, very young, and I truly believe that anybody could do anything. And if they couldn't, like, it was just because there was something wrong with their brain, right? Like everyone could do everything. And so I worked this guy's butt off. Like these days, I think I would have applied some kid gloves. Yeah. But guess what? He wound up losing somewhere between 200 and 300 pounds. Just by working, because I just said, well, just do it. Just do this. Just bend your elbows. Just do this. And he's like, oh, okay, right? And so I think that our self-limiting beliefs that we set up for ourselves based on external circumstances, I'm not going to say that there's never any veracity to them. Sure. I mean, if you're missing an arm, you're not going to do a handstand on two arms, right? I mean, that just goes without saying. But I have so many people who approach me with their excuses of why they can't do stuff. And I really believe that these are mental constructs that can be overcome, and that most people can do most things, regardless of your body size. I've gotten very overweight people, including that guy, into handstands, by the way. And again, the women without hands, the only difference is believing and working beyond your physical circumstance. Again, it doesn't mean on your first try, you're just going to be up, but it means that you can work towards anything. Don't let anybody on earth ever convince you that there's anything about you that's going to preclude you from accomplishing all of your goals. I know I talk a lot. Let me just say one more thing. There's this, back when TED Talks actually like were super profound and they only had like the best speakers on earth. One of the first TED Talks was what was called The Last Lecture. Oh, yeah. Did you see this? By Randy, I think his last name is pronounced Posh, however he pronounces it. But one thing that he said, even though this was, 20 years ago probably now, that has stuck with me forever, is don't get upset when a teacher keeps expecting more of you. When they stop expecting things of you, it means they no longer have faith that you can progress. They're only pushing you because they know you can do better. And I think that as long as people approach their mat knowing, not just like thinking, but knowing they can do better, they will.
Yeah. And that's such a, I mean, in addition to all your expertise and your experience, I mean, that service alone of being that, I don't want to say cheerleader, but just being that force, that energy in someone's life, like, hey, no, you can do it. I know you can do it. That's worth its weight in gold. So, on that note, tell our listeners if they liked anything that they heard or they want to learn more, how do they get in touch with you? How do they find you?
Okay. So, I'm going to go ahead and spell the website, the name of my company, because I know that it's a hard one. It's Yoga Athletica, which is YOGATHLETICA.com. There you'll have access and links to really everything that I do, from my YouTube channel to my Vimeo channel. People always ask, what's the difference? My YouTube channel is where I teach postures, and my Vimeo channel is where I teach classes. Okay, so the discount that I have on the KP Fit, is that what you call it? Or Get Fit, SoCal. Okay, SoCal, not even close. Okay, so the discount that I have on there is for my Vimeo channel. These are full-length classes. Everything from absolute beginners that my grandma, if she were still alive, could do, through literally what people are calling the most advanced classes that they've ever taken online. And I have everything. There's hundreds of videos. Each one is very unique with very, very, very specific instruction. So it's definitely a game changer, these classes. And then obviously I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, same Yoga Athletica. And I have my Handstand Breakthrough Revolution, which is a combination of handstands and self-empowerment, which we've talked about a lot today. So that's my flagship program that I have as well, that you could link to on the same Yoga Athletica website.
Great. Sorry, there was a little bit of a pause there in the connection, I think. But yeah, I tried a couple of those Vimeo workouts, and one of your core busters or core blasters that really set my abs on fire. So that was really fun.
I always say, like, if you watch enough of my videos, you'll know that I always say, no matter what the question, the answer is core.
Yes. It's not unlike, you know, my experience as an athlete. You talk about ego poses, where there's ego lifting in sports and specifically in football. And one of the things that our coaches always said is you can lift as much, you know, you can squat as much as you want. You can bench press as much as you want, but if you don't have the connection between those two, the core, it's never gonna translate. So that stuck with me.
Right. And if you think about the word core, right, again, like if you want to take it literally, what is the core of your existence, right? That's, again, that's that mind, body, spirit, like continuum, right? This trifecta of energies that makes us not just people, but human, right? Gives us depth. Yeah.
Well, Shauna, I knew this was going to be an interesting conversation from when we first started talking, but it's been nothing less than that. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom and everything that you've learned from yoga and from life with our listeners. And is there anything else that you wanted to let us depart with?
First of all, just again, thank you so much. And the way that I see it, listen, my students' success is my success. I try my best to just provide content that is accessible and that will always, always level everybody up, no matter what level they are at. So I welcome everybody to join in. I'm excited to be a part of the KP family.
Thank you so much, Shauna. You will have a great day, and we will be in touch. Appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you so much. Right.
This has been a Get Fit SoCal production. Please visit getfitsocal.org today.